Are we on? Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us bright and early for the Future of Music session, Future of Music Discovery. I want to welcome everyone to this exciting panel. I'm Jimmy Jelinek, Chief Creative Officer of AudioUp. We're here to talk to you today about the future of music discovery, primarily as it pertains to podcasting. Founder Jared Gustat over here created AudioUp on the premise that the process for finding and placing music in podcasts was cumbersome at best and next to impossible for those who did not have the means or ability to navigate the cumbersome process of dealing with labels and publishing houses. Short of shelling out endless sums to license tracks, there was no mechanism for original music to appear in this exploding medium, and exploding it is. Jared believed that this world would become the next great audio medium about 3 years ago, when he and I and some other partners created what was the very first musical series, musical podcast, with Baron Abanjo, which told the story of American music through two fictional characters. Working with renowned producer T-Bone Burnett, Gustat created a series, a body of music that included new music from Bob Dylan, Zac Brown, and contributions from Grammy-winning Justin Bieber and Ed Sheeran songwriter Pooh Bear. The series was a worldwide number one hit and showed that a pathway for new music and podcasts was not only viable but necessary. Gustat founded AudioUp on this premise and quickly established a body of work that placed the company at the forefront of a visionary strategy to create the IP of tomorrow that included great narrative storytelling and fantastic original music. In the past year, that resulted in series and music from the likes of Machine Gun Kelly, 24K Golden, Ian Dior, Miranda Lambert, Scarlett Burke, and countless others. The podcasts themselves were all number one hits across Apple and Spotify and created ancillary music that resulted in hundreds of millions of streams for the artists who created those songs. One of the amazing series that sprung from this larger strategy was the creation of Make It Up As We Go. And these are the people that are sitting before you today. The first ever country music-focused podcast, co-created with musician and songwriter Scarlett Burke, who joins us today, along with showrunner and writer David Hudgens. Season one debuted last year, and it's an amazing ripped-from-reality look inside the writers' rooms of Nashville and what it's like to navigate that largely male-dominated world as a female artist. I want to also introduce Scarlett Burke, Jared's co-creator on the series. She's a musician, actress, and producer who has written for the likes of Miranda Lambert, Lindsay L., L. King, and Tyler Rich. Her music compositions in the advertising world have been nominated by the Production Music Association. And finally, and not the least, David Hudgens is currently executive producer and showrunner on FBI Most Wanted, Bang Bang. Previously, he was the co-showrunner of Friday Night Lights, I think you've heard of that, and has worked as an executive producer on Past Life, Parenthood, Game of Silence, and Shut Eye. So big round of applause for our panelists today.
Thank you.
I'm going to start the panel by asking you, David. I'm going to put you. Oh, sorry. Let's watch a trailer first. Let's dim the lights here, and please don't fall asleep.
Creator of Make It Up As We Go.
We can make it up as we go.
Tune in to season two of Make It Up As We Go. Brand new storylines and an original soundtrack featuring some of my favorite artists and songwriters like L. King, Braylon, Nile Rodgers, Liz Rose, and many more.
Hey, I'm Jared Gustat, AudioUp CEO and co-creator and co-executive producer of Make It Up As We Go season two. We have an incredible soundtrack this season. Legendary songwriter Liz Rose. We all know her hits for Taylor Swift. We also have Shooter Jennings, who's coming off multiple Grammys with Tanya Tucker, as well as Brandi Carlile. And the array of young, incredible talent centered around Nashville is just too big of a list to mention, but we have L. King, Kat and Alex, Breland, Abby Anderson, and a whole host of others contributing to this incredible soundtrack. Oh, and how can I forget? Nile Rodgers, the pioneer of funk, disco, and dance music, performing with L. King on Honky Tonk Disco Nights, our lead single from the project. We also have Garrett Hedlund. He's someone known for his acting, but most people don't know that he's also an incredible singer and songwriter, and you're gonna hear an original song in this series that he put together with Scarlett.
The soundtrack for season two, which I wrote with Jared and Stat and many great songwriters, is really the soundtrack of a songwriter.
In season two of Make It Up As We Go, my character, Charlotte Sales, continues her journey beyond the writer's rooms of Nashville.
M.I.A. Our latest chick will be Mr.
Season 1 ended on a major cliffhanger, and this season we pick back up with our characters and continue their journey in Season 2.
I didn't squeeze into this jeans just for me, and I didn't do it for you. Can't help if I look like a dream.
That's Season 2 of Make It Up As We Go, coming soon from SiriusXM.
So that's coming soon, and Jared will tell you when. But this is about music discovery and how music is used in podcasts. So I'm going to talk to David first, who comes from the TV world and now the film world. David, what attracted you to Make It Up As We Go from a musical standpoint? How did you view this notion of coupling story with original songs?
Well, it was incredibly interesting because when these two walked into my office at Sony, and this was 3 years ago, I guess, with the idea for this podcast, what attracted me to it was they already had songs had already been written. They gave me songs at the time, and I was able to go home and listen to them. And it was incredibly interesting to me to approach doing a dramatic series about each episode being a song and what's the story behind that song. So we listened to the music, we sat down, and we said, there was this back alley boo I always talk about. I said, there's an episode right there. I see exactly what that episode could be about. So it was incredibly interesting to me to be able to fashion a series around the songs that already existed, because, you know, usually we go the other way. In TV, we'll do an episode, and the music gets written to match the episode. So this was a bit of reverse engineering, and it was fun. I also happen to be from Texas and love country music, so it was kind of an easy call.
But for people who are not aware of the process of licensing music, you know, when you're working on a television series, as you said, the music comes last, and it's catch-as-catch-can, I imagine. Versus this, the music was created specifically in tandem with the narrative. How has that differed from your experience working in television?
It's so much better. I mean, usually, you know, in an episodic series, we'll finish an episode, and it varies by show, by the way. FBI Most Wanted, we use almost exclusively score. But on Friday Night Lights, for example, we had a music supervisor who was amazing, the coolest surfer chick ever. And she was constantly bringing us new acts, new sounds, new songs. For an episode, you would license the song, you would put it in the episode, and that's how it worked. And typically, you had a budget, you know, for your needle drops per episode, so you would typically say, all right, we can afford 2 to 3 songs in this episode. So it was driven really by budget and by licensing, with one exception, which was there was a song in Friday Night Lights that became sort of a signature called Devil Town that was originally recorded by, I believe it was Bright Eyes or somebody like that. Anyway, the original artist didn't want to do it, so our music supervisor went out and got somebody else to cover the song, and we used it in the show, you know, for the next 5 seasons, and that person made a lot of money.
Yeah.
So there's different ways to do it, but in this case, it was, as I said, it was the opposite. The music was there.
Great. Scarlett, you're the co-creator, director, and main musical driver of this series alongside Jared. And your many famous collaborators like Miranda Lambert, Liz Rose, and so many others. What was your thought process in pairing story with music?
Well, I think, especially in the world of Nashville and country music, it's very story-based songwriting. So you're sort of writing to picture in your mind as you're writing a song in a country. So these songs had come from a collection of songs that I'd just written in Nashville that weren't necessarily going to go to radio. And so the thought process there of what do we do with these songs, how are we going to release them, or do they just sit on a shelf? And so that was where the concept came from of putting, creating a soundtrack. There was a natural story arc with the collection of these 6 songs that were originally the soundtrack for season 1. So season 2 is much different in that, like David said, is the songs have come last, which has been very tricky for our writers. But it's been writing more toward our characters of Make It Up As We Go. Charlotte Sayles is stretching her legs as a songwriter, and so it was the songwriters soundtrack really for season two. So there's a lot more of pop and less Americana, but that's what you do as a songwriter. You don't necessarily always write what you would necessarily sing. So it's the thought process has switched gears.
So are you saying that in season two, the songwriting process was more towards like the emotional core of the characters, in, you know, and say like a musical when the songs themselves are indicative of sort of the inner life of what the characters are going through?
Yeah, and it was just really to like show what it's like to be a songwriter in Nashville, and you could have a song with Miranda Lambert, and then the next year you could have nothing, and you just get knocked back down. And so this is kind of that story. Did that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely.
I've had way too many margaritas since I've been in Austin.
No, it's no problem. I guess my larger question really is to understand how, you know, there is, music is wallpaper in the sense that, and then music and like when you go see a musical, the characters break into song.
Right.
And that song is indicative of the inner life of the character. And it's like, I'm going to the store. You know, they're like, it's driving exposition and it's driving story.
Yeah, what's cool about this is that you get to experience what happens in the songwriter's day-to-day to create a song that comes out on country radio. It could be, like last season, Nicole Gallion wrote some music with us. And she was telling me a story about how she writes songs in her head in the carpool lane, dropping her kids off at school. And then that song, Blake Shelton, will cut it. And so the lives of these women writing these songs that are sang by these incredible country artists, they're mostly male on country radio. It's like, what's going on in their day to day to create these lyrics and these songs? So we do. That's what the episodes tell is those stories. So
where do you do your writing? Where's your like your most creative space? In the car, in the bathroom, in your backyard, when you're walking your dog?
It happens anywhere. It's usually when I'm like curling my hair or fixing my hair, like something will come up and I'll grab my phone and I'll sing the melody into my voice memo. And then I'll take that and go into a writing room with two other writers and say, hey, I have this idea for a song about Carhartt or something. And then we'll write a goofy song about that and have fun with it. And so really it just inspiration can really just come from anywhere. The best is whenever it's not in the writer's room. You get your hook, song title, and then take it to the room and write it with other writers and whatnot.
Yeah, I've seen you guys do it before because I've never seen how a song is written before. And I think people, you know, they just assume that it's some magical process. But, you know, I think people would, it would be interesting to show the process.
Well, two things. One is in, writing for a purpose, like a script or a show, you come in and, you know, you at least can sit down with other writers that we're assembling songs with and say, this is this moment, and this is, you know, we have this moment where Charlotte needs a big hit song for this hit artist, and you all of a sudden start to, like, take on a role of just, you know, filling a creative ticket out. But when we actually have had this really serious moment where she's had a title before we went into the room, or if we were to have an inside joke like fly fishing or Honky Tonk Disco Nights, we would at least have a starting point. And, you know, we could have probably finished it ahead of the room, but we also had, there's her personal songs, there's in this project, which are more of the Americana and the country ones.
I don't think you're mic'd up, sorry. Just so you know. Do you have it on? Or maybe she can...
I'll talk about it. But then there's also the songs as characters.
Oh, move it up.
We don't want to miss any pearls of wisdom, Jared. I think maybe it's not turned on, your unit.
On.
Yeah, turn on your unit.
Stand up, Phil.
This is on. Oh,
there you go.
But there's the personal songs that she came to the project with in season one, which almost sounds like Americana or country. And then Charlotte Sayles is a character who knows that Nashville is not a town that necessarily financially rewards, you know, Americana.
You can't say Americana in Nashville.
Yeah, it's a bad word. But, you know, so the character this year is also created all these story songs that are not necessarily for Charlotte or Scarlett, who's sitting here. These are for the Blake Sheltons, the L. Kings, the Nile Rodgers, the Cat and Alexes. So that process really is like you know, I've seen it. Her personal songs or my personal songs when I write, they mostly stay up here, and it's like at some point you'll get around to it and record it, as opposed to we are working with the script writer and we need to find the perfect funk, disco, country song for this moment because we're writing Nile Rodgers and Elle King into it. So,
yeah, I guess my question was how much of the song process is mapped out, as you say, when, you know, you, once David has broken the story and the season is sort of set down, you know that, all right, we're gonna need X song here, we're gonna need B song here. How much of it is that, and then how much of it is the process of discovery where like, oh man, I've got this great song, we need to wrap some story around it?
It's both. I feel like there's certain songs, like we have a song in season 2 called Honky Tonk Disco, and it is so fun. Mm-hmm. It's the one that Nile Rodgers played on, and we had to write that song in, and so that was going back to David and Brooks and just writing it into the script, but it's a little bit of both season.
Most of the personal songs that, you know, it was almost the exact same process, but in reverse. Like season 1, she had all these songs that were the, not the wallpaper, but the character of Charlotte and who she is. And then there was 2 big ones. We knew that we needed to have 2 songs that were specially constructed after the fact that we had a sale. So this year, I remember you said, oh, I don't think I have any music for this season yet to start with, but you had Gone in the Morning and Forever Kind of Love, and those songs you had just been working on and didn't realize, I think at the time, that those were gonna be the bedrock again. And then much like what we did with Nicole, we ended up this season just going purpose-built, building a special writer's room or writing team with her, myself, Gabe and Abby Anderson, who's another country artist, to figure out what those 2 or 3 big pop lifts would be. But, you know, for us, the goal has always been have great music, tell a great story, but, you know, in the terms of music discovery and the big thought process of it all, the same way that people have, you know, TikTok as a discovery mechanism or YouTube, can podcasting, an inherently audio medium, be a place where you discover your next great song by Elle King or by, you know, Miranda Lambert? And so far, it's been so new that I don't even think people really think of podcasting as a place to really go to discover music. They go there to have true crime or investigative reporting, but we're kind of breaking in just a brand new medium around it.
Let's talk about Nile Rodgers for a second, because there's somebody who, you know, is a giant in the musical world, a producer, creator of Chic, some of the greatest songs of all time, has sold. How did he come to the project, and how does his musical brain jive with Nashville and what you're doing? It's such an interesting mashup, like this idea of honky tonk disco nights, the idea that there's like a country funk mashup. And I think that's sort of indicative of what you're trying to do, of mash up these different genres, bring music into podcasting, put a little bit of country into funk.
I'll let Scarlett answer the first part, I'll answer the second part creatively.
How did Nile get involved with this project? The behind the scenes of those conversations I'm not aware of, but I think what intrigued him about this project was doing something different. And I think he probably gets approached a lot to do a lot of pop funk type of tracks, and hearing like, oh, a country funk song, that could be cool. He's a very innovative guy, so I think that's, not to toot our own horns, but I think that's what intrigued him to do the song.
At the end of the day, it's just a great song, but I think to double down on that point, most artists get pitched songs at them all day. Hey, cut my song, come, and they have to think, is it a hit or why am I doing this? By having another utility to it, by going, well, it's gonna be heard because it's in a piece of content and it's a hit song and it has an incredible lift around it. When our business was starting up, we were just putting up podcasts on our own through iHeart and through different vendors who would upload the music and the podcast to Spotify, Apple. But now that we're working with our investor SiriusXM, we also know that if the songs are great and they're worthy, they're going to get a listen from the radio side, and that will start to spark discovery of the song, discovery of the podcast itself. And I think for Nile, it was really just different. You know, we weren't going to him saying, cut the song, it's the next Get Lucky or the next La Freak.
Perfect segue, Jared. Make It Up As We Go is the first release in Audio Up's partnership with SiriusXM. Will this be released through their satellite channels, and how does this differ from their normal distribution model?
SiriusXM is a company that comes in most cars. You know, when you buy your car, I think you get a 6-month subscription, and it's at some point it turns off and then they want you to keep subscribing. For all intents and purposes, we think that this is a pretty new idea because a lot of people who have SiriusXM may also subscribe to Spotify or Apple, and this is another reason for people to listen when they're outside of the car at home. They also own Stitcher and Pandora, so there's great exposure for promoting the podcast on their talk radio channel, promoting the music across their country channels. And it's new. The innovation of it all is kind of brand new. And you know, Scarlett and I recently met with the programming team up in New York just to explain what we were doing. And it seems like they're very motivated to have more reasons for people to subscribe to SiriusXM beyond the pop music that's on there and have something that's ownable that can, if we're successful, turn into a hit album, a hit television show, and continue to spawn off derivatives, which is something that radio itself has not been known for, and podcasts themselves. Now we're seeing tons of people looking at it as the IP of the future, and by having an evergreen asset where people can, you know, it's not like the news. Anytime someone wants to get involved with Make It Up As We Go, they can start it the day it launches or discover it 2 years later if a friend tells them it's good, or 5 years later, the story will still be evergreen.
I think what's interesting as well about Sirius is that their main growth now is not occurring inside cars, but through the use of the app inside homes, especially as smart speakers grow in ubiquity. And now you're able to have this giant pipe to bring Make It Up As We Go into millions of homes. In that vein, what's the pathway from podcast to radio for when a song, say, you know, Honky Tonk Disco Nights becomes a huge hit? What's the pathway? What does that look like from, you know, sort of walk me through how it goes from the podcast to radio to streaming hit?
I mean, ultimately, if the song is good and it's available to be listened to across Spotify or SiriusXM or Apple or conventional radio, it has to go through the traditional channels of people, you know, treating it like a single. I mean, that's really the whole point of the songs that we're writing for the season.
This is actually, this season we've had a whole full circle moment from Shooter Jennings being involved and SiriusXM partnering with Audio Up. In season one, after season one came out, I got a DM on Instagram from Shooter Jennings' manager saying, "Hey, Shooter."
So that's how the relationship came about, is just randomly through social media?
Yeah, he reached out saying, Shooter discovered some of your songs and he wants to play it on his electric rodeo show, and I about freaked out and checked and checked and checked to make sure it was his real manager. And then sure enough, he played Make It Up As We Go, the song, on his channel for a week. And it was the first time, to my knowledge, that a song had gone from a podcast organically through radio, satellite radio. And so now this season, I've just having Shooter Jennings involved, he plays himself, he produced two of the songs on the soundtrack, and so it really is this whole full circle moment.
That's kind of an interesting point in terms of the discovery for electric rodeo, because one of the things I was about to bring up is that what you guys are doing with Make It Up As We Go and sort of Jared's model in general is it's using podcasts as a shortcut to the traditional A&R model, and it can provide a backdoor for new musicians to not only be discovered by fans but to have their music discovered and potentially be signed by major labels. You know, Scarlett, as a creator who has lived inside the podcast world and outside the major label world and inside Nashville, how has Make It Up As We Go helped, you know, that process for you? Obviously, the Shooter is one great example, but you know, do you see this as a pathway for future musicians to sort of emulate that model?
Absolutely. I mean, my background before Make It Up As We Go, which seems like a decade ago, but I wrote with Jared's old company, Jingle Punks, and I was a freelance writer, and we would write for film and TV. And so with that, you're writing to picture. And this was just a new outlet for songs that didn't necessarily, you know, land for a project or whatever. But yeah, I do think it's another way of just giving another artist or another songwriter a chance to get music out there. You know, you shouldn't have to go through all the politics of country radio just to get a song out there. And you know, there's a lot of great stories that are told, a lot of great songs that are written that unfortunately, you know, we don't get to hear because it's a very controlled environment of country radio. So absolutely, I think that this is such a cool way of giving writers and artists an outlet.
Also, to add to that, as an outsider outside of Nashville, I've seen Scarlett's name, you know, jump to the top of the pile there, where in Nashville they look for signifiers. First you get a manager, then you get a publisher, and then you wait 5 years and maybe you put out a song at some point and they talk about it a lot. But, you know, the names that you're shoulder to shoulder with now, releasing content in an untraditional way, seeing you next to, you know, in the stature of the town as a writer, you know, people will go, well, how do they discover Scarlett? It wasn't through a hit song, it was through a hit podcast. And, you know, getting to write with people like Liz Rose, legendary people who wrote for Taylor Swift and Little Big Town, writing with Nicole Galyon, Dan and Shay, and Miranda Lambert, working with Miranda Lambert, it was probably the most twisty and turny path to ever just release music as a, you know, if you were just saying this is how I'm releasing music, it's like writing the song, then 10,000 other steps on top of it.
Right.
Hire a screenwriter.
When I say
actors.
It feels like a decade ago, it's not in a bad way. It's that I've learned a lot. When this idea first came up, Jared mentioned a podcast, and I said, what is a podcast? So that's how far we've come. But it's been, it's just been like, I was an actor as well before, and songwriting, and so getting to work with David and seeing his process for writing an outline for an 8-episode series and where the music ties into all that, I've just learned so much about even in being an actor and working with such incredible talent on season 1. It's just been such an incredible project, and I just hope it keeps going.
Look, let me just say, I was the same way when you guys, when we first got together 3 years ago. I wasn't like, what is a podcast? But I was kind of like, what is a podcast? And that has changed unbelievably in the last 3 years now. Everybody, you know, it's development season in Hollywood right now. Everybody out there is looking for a podcast that they can leverage into a pitch for a TV project or a film project. So podcasts are what we call the IP that you go out and you pitch on now. It's one of the reasons that my son and I, who co-wrote this, got involved, is that we looked at it as that, you know, maybe one day that does become a television show. Podcasts have become such a hot thing for film and mostly TV. And one of the great things about it is the barrier to entry is so low. You know, you don't need a lot of resources to make a podcast, quite honestly. So go make one.
How has Nashville reacted to you sort of finding this back door and sort of hacking the traditional model? Has it been open arms, or have you been like, you get out of here, son, and get your podcast in the car and fuck off?
There's three perspectives here, so we can go down the line. One is I'm extremely proud of how I think aggressive we've been about trying to put ourselves into a town which doesn't necessarily adopt change as quickly as certain other parts of the music business. They're seeing a changing of the guard where music is content. You know, if you look at how Drake cycles music out, no one cares about albums. They care song, you know, 6 weeks later song, 6 weeks later song, go away, let those things percolate in the algorithm, song, song, song. So eventually all those songs, if he wants, become some form of album so they can rebundle it and repackage it. We're now seeing Nashville saying, we're gonna try this new type of streaming model. We fit into that nicely because 6 episodes, 8 episodes, new song with every episode, and then a sort of big, big song on the tail or top part of our project to market it at the front end, market it at the back end, and the next thing you know, if it's successful, you know, the algorithm sort of warms up and people can discover the soundtrack as a mixtape. So I am very optimistic about it. We get a lot of questions about what the hell are you guys doing and can I be involved? And some takers have really wholeheartedly embraced us, like working with people like Abby Anderson and Tyler Rich and, you know, people who have just, you know, really, you know, got it. And then some people scratch their heads and go, I don't get it, but I want to participate anyways. So what have you seen?
All of it. But we, you know, when we first started explaining this project and in Nashville and meeting with labels. The labels were, you know, of course they had a lot of questions, wanted to understand the model and the process and everything. Songwriters and artists were so excited and wanted to jump on board. You know, they were like, hell yeah, a new way of releasing our songs, let's do it. But explaining to labels what this was pretty funny.
And
it's entertaining.
Some people write every day in Nashville 300 songs a year, and they may never get heard. So we have a pretty incredible process of anything we write typically ends up in some form in the podcast or as some form of music.
Right, and I think that also it's like Nashville has always wanted to have a bridge over to Los Angeles for the sync world, and it never has really worked. Like, being a songwriter in LA, you're either pop or you're writing for film and TV. Being a songwriter in Nashville, you're a songwriter in Nashville. And that really has not, they've tried to do it and it just, that bridge has not made it all the way. So this has actually been that opportunity for artists and songwriters to get to work. And this is kind of like working in sync. And you know that.
What is sync for people who don't know what that is?
It's one of your songs getting licensed for film and TV as in the show, and or a commercial about nacho cheese fries for yes. Taco Bell. but I think this is just a great way for artists to feel like, and songwriters to know that when there's so many times you're writing a song and you're like, is this ever going to be heard? Why are we doing this? And then I think when songwriters get together with Jared and hopefully myself, they feel like that song is going to go somewhere outside of those four walls. So that's been my experience with writing for this project in Nashville.
And the last point about that, which is important to note, is that it's almost like a video game in Nashville. You work your way up from like people you've never heard of that are in the same boat as you that are there. And the publishers want to test a little bit to see if you've got something. The first
Your mic isn't working. Where'd it go?
Sure. Am I back?
Yeah, you can give it turn it off, we'll just give it up.
Thanks.
It's gonna buzz, right?
There you go.
Check. 1, 2. We good?
No.
No. I can talk into
Just talk loud, man. Or talking to me.
Check. Oh, there we go. Basically, instead of us, you know, doing sort of battle, trying to make our way up through the proper procedure that does happen, and again, Nashville is very adaptive. It's not as rigid as we're saying, but the first session that we did for the first season was with one of the biggest writers in all of Nashville, Nicole Galleon, and even I was like, holy crap, this is not normal. And it wasn't like they were like, oh, Scarlett and Jared, we know who you are, and we're really, you know, we're here to write a big song for Miranda Lambert, which we were that day. It was an opportunity for them, it was an opportunity for us, and it was almost packaged the same way that a writer's room would be packaged for a film or TV show or a Disney musical. And we sat in there and we said, this is what we're doing. And since then, Scarlett has, and myself, we've been able to work with all types of writers, small writers, medium writers, but also Nicole and Liz Rose and pretty legendary people pretty fast. And I think that's a town where it's a tough nut to crack, but it's also a reputation town. So people often ask you who you've worked with, and that has also made our job in season two quite a bit easier.
So one more question. I want to open it up to questions from the audience. So just, what can we expect from the soundtrack this season in general? What can you leak? What can you tell us?
It's a lot more pop this season. Like I said earlier, it is Charlotte's songwriting journey. So she's writing for pop artists, and not pop artists, but more commercial country artists. So those are the songs. There's funk country, there's pop country, and then there's funtry. I have a song on there that is mine called Gone in the Morning, and it's more Americana. I grew up in Amarillo, Texas, so I was raised on the classic country and red dirt country, and so I love to sneak some of that in there just to keep, you know, keep some of that alive throughout the project.
And you have some Spanish influence on the Liz Rose.
We have a song called Cantina Lullaby, and Shooter Jennings produced the song. We recorded it live in the living room of the Audio House. I'm not even going to get into that, but the office there. And then But we wrote that one with Liz Rose. It really just poured out in like 15 minutes. And it was a melody that I'd been fiddling around with. And I said, I don't know, it sounds like a Cantina Lullaby to me. And Liz was like, that's the song, let's write it. So that's on there. It's just kind of a goofy campfire lullaby whiskey drinking song.
That sounds great.
I have a question for Dave before we throw it to questions here. Just because Scarlett and I are new to the process of development, I'm asking this sincerely, what happens next in your world when season two comes out? How do you typically take something that's a piece of intellectual property and start to direct it towards a TV or film marketplace?
You essentially take two seasons of the podcast and go in and pitch a show based on it. You know, it's built in already. I mean, Brooks and I were writing it and designing the seasons. You're essentially, I mean, it's basically like writing, we wrote a TV show, it just happens to be a podcast. So you take that in, you say, here's what we got, listen to this, you know, they'll probably listen to one or two episodes. The other built-in advantage of this show is also we've got this music. So the songs are already out there, there's already a fan base for the show. So it's literally going in and just, you know, when I first started, you would go and pitch to, I sound like an old man, NBC, CBS, and Fox. Now, you know, you pitch for a week because you got to go to Amazon, you got to go to Netflix, you got to go to all over the place. So you take that in, you do your 20-minute pitch, and hopefully somebody buys it and you know, makes it.
Well, we hope that happens, so sincerely. So we want to open it up to questions to the audience, and yeah.
Hi there.
Hi.
This is Presley. I'm not sure if this mic works, but
we hear you.
I think you have to just create your own platform as an artist. You know, with social media and TikTok, and now as we're talking about podcasts, I think there's a lot of new platforms for artists to launch their songs off of. I mean, there's artists and songwriters that are on TikTok that they put something out on TikTok, it goes, do you say viral when you're talking about TikTok?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yes, you
do.
Like so, that guy Dylan
takes
Wilson.
Off.
I'm not familiar with your ways.
But then they'll sign that artist just off TikTok. It's crazy. It's cool. You know, it's a new way of getting your stuff out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of signal and noise ratio in the marketplace. Everybody has their own talents. It's not necessarily, and I don't know if I'm describing it the right way, but it's not a meritocracy where if you write the best song, it's going to go number one. You look at incredible marketers, the Lil Nas X's, the Jack Harlow's, the, you know, the Walker Hayes in country who, you know, waited his 10 years and then waited another 10 years and then did something goofy on TikTok. But I do think that dressing up your content with story the same way that records and old, think years ago, Pink Floyd, The Wall, it's a concept record, and you build a story around it, and you build hype around it. You know, watching how Drake's first mixtape went around the hip-hop community and seeing how people were like, this is going to be big. You have to start to think about it beyond just the song itself. And, you know, look at the music from Encanto. Right now, it's every single song is 100 million streamer on it. Would every single one of those songs be 100 million streaming song if it wasn't in a Pixar musical? How I don't even know where I would discover that music or where my kids would discover it. So finding more touch points for discovery and to build people into your story. I think there's a big, people want to be inspired, people want to be told stories, they want to know the deeper meaning behind what's there. And if you can give clues, people will follow your story.
Thank you. I have a follow-up. You want to give value for the content you're creating. How do you sell that value to a consumer that won't even listen to it in the first place?
A choreographed dance like Walker Hayes. how would you answer that?
I mean, ultimately, look, I used to be more cynical about music and the value in the marketplace, but I think I'm more open-minded now than ever before. My answer to anybody who's starting in the business is figure out a way for people to get excited about your music, promote it, try to keep the value in it, look at different ways in which you can hold on to the rights so you're not just giving it away. But know that every step is a step that leads to another step and another step. And, you know, that's why in hip hop, the mixtape concept was always incredible. You give your music away and you give it to people and you hopefully find one fan here, two fans there. And everything has sort of evolved from, you know, live music and playing out to where we are now in this digital economy. You just need to continue to bring people into your digital domain, and hopefully at some point people love you so much that they want to pay you for what you do.
Sure. Step on up.
Also, like with crossover, I think that was something that I was always afraid of. Before the Chainsmokers, this is a funny story, before the Chainsmokers were the Chainsmokers, I got an email from those two boys, because I'm friends with their sister, and they said, hey, would you ever want to like collaborate with us? And I was like, I play guitar. You guys hit buttons. And then they blew up and became the Chainsmokers.
Whoops.
Like, whoops. So I think, you know, there's so much value in not being afraid to cross over to another genre that you don't necessarily sound like. And that's taken off a lot, I feel like, in the last
What's the rule of thumb? So, you know, yes and, the old improv signifier?
Whoops.
How beneficial is that to music discovery? Like, do you see like a significant rise in your metrics for like the artists that you follow on the podcast, or I don't know, like, is there anything specific?
Are you pointing at me?
Look, at the end of the day, we went from, you know, taking established artists like a Miranda Lambert or an L King, who, you know, for this season, and being able to use it actually as artist discovery and artist development. So I would be very curious, if it wasn't my podcast, who the heck is Scarlett Burke? Because her name, you know, it's like, again, I always equate things back to innovative genres. And in hip hop, if I see Drake plus someone I've never heard of, I'm going to check it out. And there's not as much of that cosign thing that exists in rock and roll or in country music. But I think that there's something really cool about the idea of a cosign, you know, by Miranda saying it's cool. People now know, okay, this is a serious person and a contender as a creator. So, I mean, yeah, we've seen quite a bit of a lift from everybody who's participated in this thing from the music side.
We'll talk about the process, too, of the sort of holy trinity of Machine Gun Kelly, 24K Golden, and Ian Dior, who we worked with in our Halloween in Hell series. And it was sort of just before their wave. And then, you know, I think that is indicative of the question as well.
The medium itself of podcasting, I think everybody here has read the headlines, I think, seeing, you know, Joe Rogan gets $100 million to create his podcast. It's new, it's novel right now. Nobody knows exactly what the value of the podcast is. I think David really summarized it by saying it's the IP of the future. But during COVID, with no touring and albums sort of just being put out and labels not knowing how to follow what models were happening, those three people, Machine Gun Kelly, Ian, and 24K Golden, said yes to one of our early podcasts. At a day before our podcast came out, Machine Gun Kelly was number one on the Hot 200, and 24 and Ian were number one on the pop chart with Mood. Nothing to do with us, but it just went to show that the appetite is there for bigger artists to participate, and the artists that are in development or artists that are trying to tell a story to work with people at that caliber. All boats rise, because those people got an opportunity to put music out in and around the timeline of their marketing for their recent record, but also act and also put out music that wasn't going to interfere with their core release at the time. So it really is pretty unique, and there is no rules yet. We think that we're setting a foundation for what people will hopefully do in the future for music discovery.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
As well, I just
want to
say thank you for making that show. It sounds awesome.
Very
But also, I have a podcast myself that I would consider to be an audio documentary about independent musicians basically finding ways to adapt to the new world and build a career.
That's, what's it called?
It's called Musicians Can Thrive. Anywhere you want to listen.
That's awesome.
Thank you. So for those smaller musicians, playlisting is a really sort of valuable way for them to get discovered. And so I'm just curious about y'all's perspective on playlisting, where you have a podcast episode and then also like songs that are included in the episode. Do you think we're close to that, far away? Do people not even care?
You have an answer.
Well, I mean, for us, you know, one of the first that we saw was, you know, as the podcast window drops, the same key art is associated with the soundtrack. And we, with one of our podcasts last year, was the first time that we were on the front page of the Apple platform in the carousel and New Music Friday. And for us, it was a significant moment. We're hoping with this season of Make It Up As We Go that as you have our key songs, we set it up, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks in advance, go through the pitch tool and properly work with our distribution partner so that there's a reason why people at the editorial side on the playlisting will want to go, what is that? That looks interesting and we should give it some attention. I think we're closer than you think to those things being tied together.
That's awesome. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Hi, I'm just curious about the decision to do a podcast. Is that just because it's easier than trying to sell a pilot on a TV show, or was it something you thought was more well-suited for podcasting? Is there a desire to turn it into a TV show? I'm just kind of curious about the creative decision.
You're looking at me. I think you're asking me, right? the decision to do it was... First of all, anything new is very exciting to me. TV can get very moribund after a while, and so when these guys came in, a lot of it had to do with the two of them. I mean, you know, there's good energy and good creative juju here. But I was like, if I'm being completely honest, first of all, I thought it would be a lot easier, you know, because there's, you know, half-hour episodes. Every show I've done has been an hour. And when you're producing, the production side is definitely easier, obviously, because you don't have to go out and shoot it, you record it. So I thought it would be easier. I also thought it would be exciting because you could test the boundaries more. You know, it's not like I was constrained by broadcast standards on network television. And so we got, you know, especially in season one, I thought we could tell stories and create characters that would not be traditional. We had Craig Robinson in season one as played Apollo, the vocal coach. And that was just great fun. You know, he just sort of went in there and had a heyday with the character. So that was part of it. The idea, you know, when my agent said you should sit with these guys, you know, he's like, you know, if you can come up with this and create something, it can, you know, you're basically creating your own IP for a future television pitch. So I viewed it as that. I was like, yes, I'm going to do this project. I also had the chance to work with my son, which I was very worried about at the beginning, but it worked out great. And it was fun and it was exciting, and I love music and the idea that these songs were there. And I really wanted to, and we did this, I'll tease a little bit about season two. There's a whole arc for Scarlett's character where, and this does happen, and it's, you know, hey, come write a song for big country guy, you know, and you're like, fuck, I don't even like that genre, but that's what you do when you're a pro and you have to crank out a song. So we turned that into a story in season two. And then the end of season two, what we're driving to is sort of a big moral crisis moment. I don't want to give it away, but we sort of, you know, look, Me Too has occurred across every industry, in mine in particular, but it's happening in the music business too. So Nashville being dragged, kicking and screaming into the current is a story that we're doing through Charlotte's character. So that was a long rambling answer to say, because I thought it would be fun and because I thought I could turn it into a TV show and I wanted to work with these people, and that's why I did.
But that is our business model though. So to answer your question, everything that we do, the goal is that it has an afterlife as a TV show, as a film, as a stage play. As Jared said, this is the IP of the future, and what it offers studios and streamers and production companies is a shortcut to the development process. Instead of just a pitch on a piece of paper, you have this three-dimensional entity that has an audience and has a story and has scripts and has music.
There seems to be some gaps in there that I'm not kind of picking up on how that happened. Was it the podcasting popularity and now you're walking in Sony? No.
We broke in.
We literally,
climbed the fence of Sony lot. And
it really was kind of a chaotic process. No, we were not very patient people.
Well, WME bought Jared's first business, or his old business, Jingle Punk. So he has a... you know, connections there from them owning his old business. And so Nancy introduced us. So it was really through David's agent. And that was how it was set up, right?
Yeah, but it was kind of like honestly, I'd never in the years, even when they owned our business, had never been set up like that before. Like, honestly, everyone says, what do agents do? Even when they owned our business, I wouldn't know because that's not what we did. And Scarlett and I were bouncing around this idea, and we just somehow, Nancy said, you should meet with David. He knows what to do with country music, and he's a music lover, and he knows about how television works. And we went in there, like, if anyone watched that SNL sketch with Garth and Kat, we were like, it's a podcast, it's a musical, and we were kind of talking all over each other, but the energy, we kind of blew your hair back that day, and afterwards, I was like, how do you think we did? I was like, I think we killed it. And then you called
us. I think what you're saying is you're missing the step. You didn't miss it because we haven't gone yet. I wanted to wait until we had two seasons of content, and especially since it's 8 episodes or maybe even 6 this year, it's like you want to build a little bit of that yet. It was also not a good time to be pitching projects in the last 2 years because of the pandemic. I have been running this show that I'm doing from my house for 2 years. Everything's on Zoom. So it wasn't a good time to pitch in the marketplace, and now it's back. And now, you know, this development season that's happening right now, you know, we're back to, you know, take Tram A to Shuttle B to Netflix Building 3 to pitch on 4-6, you know. So that's so you didn't miss a step because it hasn't quite happened yet. And that's one of the reasons why we designed season 2 to be as current as possible and to address what's going on, you know. And so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
I'm going to have a production company. How are you doing, everybody?
Okay. Hello.
My question to you is this. If you have a local artist that's already established in his community, and he does a pitch and wants to be on your show, and the producer is not feeling what he does with his material, but the song is good, now is he gonna, are you going to waive his rights all the way through and just take what he created and redo it? Do you understand what I'm saying? As far as the artist come in and he got an idea, all of you are on board, of course, the song, but Niles wants to do it a different way. Now you're battling creative control. So how does that
Yeah, work? Ultimately, with anybody who creates a piece of music, a song, or you know, or a piece of music itself, a composition, if there's a use for it in, you know, the world that we're creating with it, you know, whether it's a song that we collaborate on and then an artist wants to adapt it and make it different, there's still the chain of title. You know, if more people come in to finish the song, it just would adapt from the writing side. But you know, for the most part, most of our artists that we've worked with have been pretty easy breezy. When we write a song for the project, we approach Niall and he produces it, but that's not necessarily taking away from the writing side of it. And even with, you know, I wasn't in the room when you recorded with Elle King. What was that process like? She just heard the song and she's like,
She is the coolest person on this planet, one, and she's very talented, but she just, you know, she came in and we had a Abby Anderson's vocal on the demo from the writing session. Abby has an incredible voice, as does Elle King. We wanted to hear Elle King on the song, so when Elle went into the booth to record, the song is really, it's really catchy, so you can easily fall into that vocal. And Elle had a moment where she recorded all the vocals and we listened back and she said, it doesn't really sound like me, because she was leaning so much into Abby's vocal. And she said, this girl can sing and I'm trying to sing like her. And I said, we want to hear Elle King on the song. We love Abby, but we want to hear you on the song, so you make it your own. And then we started the session over, which was totally fine and worth it, because she got in that booth and Elle King came through that microphone and it was so cool. But really, that was how the session was. It was her take on this song with her own vocal performance, and you hear her on that. And she knows, I'm glad that she said something, because it made a huge difference. She knows herself. She knows, you know, she knew what she was doing, and I'm glad that she spoke up about redoing the vocal. So that's how the session went. She put her own spin on it and made it her thing.
Yeah, and just at the end of the day, we respect our writers, we respect our producers, and the artists seem to have, that we've been fortunate enough to work with, seem to, you know, want to embrace the material we've given. But you know, every situation calls for a different, you know, set of outcomes, so it's just about being collaborative.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for coming,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah,
thanks,
guys.
Everybody.
Thank you. 10 o'clock Thursday.
If anybody wants to hear some of the music from the podcast, we have a second panel today where we will be debuting some of the music with Miss Liz Rose, who... Abby Anderson. What are some of Liz's songs, just to tease the panel here?
What's the Taylor Swift?
Taylor Swift.
High Horse.
Girl Crush by Little Big Town. Basically every song in the first 5 years of Taylor's career that you would know. And Liz is going to be with us talking about the soundtrack and demoing some songs for a live audience. So hopefully we'll see you guys there and make it up as we go. You can find season one anywhere you get podcasts. And you can check out the soundtrack as well. Shameless plug. Make it up as we go.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.